Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the July 15 edition of Commodity Week. Well, this week, the July commodity contracts in Chicago expired. USDA updated the supply and demand figures, and the economies of the world faded a bit. Oh, and the weather forecast turned really hot and dry. We'll try to put them all in perspective today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Greg Wagner at GWX Ag Consultants in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in the studio today include Mike Georgie of Allendale from Mahomet, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Sometimes when a contract expires, the lead option must rally to make ends meet. That happened with the July and September corn contract this week. So the question is this. Weekly September chart shows a 59-cent gain in corn, but on the continuous lead contract, it's just 29 cents. Does it tell us anything about the amount of corn available in the old crop to the marketplace? Mike Zuzolo.
I think it tells us the market's skeptical of the USDA stocks number, Todd, and we saw that when the July shot back quickly after that report. I think it also says, by the spot basis, telling the futures market that we don't have the supplies in hand and that the pipeline's tight. When I see the spot basis at 60 over in some locations, 90 over in other locations, then the fall basis is 15 to 20 under, something's going to have to give. And my take on it is fall corn basis is going to migrate towards the spot without a break in that ridge of high pressure the next 10 days. We will see basis run higher.
Kurt Kimmel?
Well, when you look at the weekly chart, you got to look at the weekly high, which the July put in, then you put the dash where the SEP closed, of course. But the first thing that came to my mind is if the spot goes off higher, it's the job of the futures to go back up and attempt that level, or else if it closed lower, go down that level. But as far as supplies, they're there. It's a matter of prying them loose, and that's what the cash market's trying to do at this time. Whenever an end user needs some inventory, they'll push the basis.
And Mike Georgie.
Yeah, I agree with what Kurt and Mike both said, and it is. You have to pry it out of the user's hands, and I also hear that a lot of the end users were filled up until the end of July, and they're worried about August and September because we know we're not going to have any early harvest this year.
Okay, so the numbers actually look like this for the week in the corn. And July expired, so we give you July and September on the weekly trade, overnight and high, low, open outcry and electronic both. Corn had a high this week, $7.42, low at $6.63¾. The settlement price now for the September at $7.01¼. It was up 29 cents in the lead, but the September a gain of 59 cents. And December futures is $6.85 settlement price for the corn, up 48 cents. You told me that it would be tempted to try to make that high for the week that came in the July. It was a long way up there.
Well, at least where the July went off the board at 716.5 area.
Oh, but not to 742 for the week.
Well, we come in here next week, and there's no moisture at the end of next week, and we're in the 90s all week. We could climb there very quickly. We're kind of in the hands of the weatherman at the moment.
What are the weather guys telling your folks at Allendale?
Well, the next 5 to 6 days is going to be hot. Now, the reason we fell back during the session today is they come out at noon and said we were going to be a little bit cooler. But we're supposed to have the ridge coming in, which I think if they stay with that come Sunday night, Monday morning, we could be up limit. They are definitely focused on the weather. We got another cooling that may come in next weekend, but it's supposed to last for maybe 2 days, and then we're going to be hot again. So if we stay hot and dry over the next 30 days, you're going to see a lot of upside here.
Mike, let's just deal with the nearby for the week, Zuzalo, and talk about the weekly crop progress reports and then how you divide the Corn Belt up and what that means with this heat. So you've got Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, a lot more acres. You've got southern Illinois, parts of Indiana and Ohio that were way behind, and the heat is in parts of those and not in other parts.
Yeah, if you throw on top of what Mike talked about and you throw on top of that the crop progress numbers coming out Monday night, and then you throw on top of that if there's anything done in Washington and on Capitol Hill with the outside markets, Todd, I think you'll have your weekly trend probably made as early as Tuesday morning, because you'll have probably most of the important information out there for the trade to make a decent decision. But I think the other two things that probably add more upside potential in the very, very short term, and I mean the next 1 to 3 weeks, the two things that are there that haven't been there is we do have Chinese demand, unlike previous years. And the other thing is the feed wheat competition we had when the July futures was on the lead month. I'm being told by good sources that the global supplies of feed wheat are starting to run thinner and thinner and thinner, and those prices have been coming up in the European market. So feed wheat's going to become less of a competitor to corn as we go forward, in my view.
Kurt, when USDA released the supply and demand report this week, I took a look at the average market price. That's cash price for corn. It was down 7.7% from the monthly, right? And is now 550 to 650 instead of what, $6 to $7. So they dropped it pretty substantially. But here we are in a rally immediately after that. How do farmers deal with those two different diverging ideas?
Well, first of all, you got to have a plan of your own, stick to it, and fine tune as you go along. If you go from report to report, you're going to be wore out real quick. You come in here and you have carry out closer to a billion bushel, naturally they're going to lower the average price. But the next few reports here, if we start fine-tuning harvested acres and lowering yield and tighten that carry out, they'll adjust that average price back up.
Soybean futures for the week finished like this. Remember, July expired, so we give you July and August again as a combination for the week. $13.97 was the high, the low at $13.42. A settlement price at $13.85¾. The lead option up 33¾ on the weekly charts. The August contract up 39¢ on the weekly chart. November beans this week at $13.87. Up 40½¢. Anything out of that supply and demand report that sparked your interest for beans?
Well, I think beans are kind of the sleeper. They're just kind of following along. Of course, the supply and demand, the bullish thing for beans is that they did lower acres, which is going to make a difference with the hot and dry weather here again on the beans, is what harvest is going to be. So it's the sleeper. It's kind of following along. I mean, there's no big buying from China. There's nothing happening in the world supply for beans, so it's got to keep the price ratio with corn too. So I think it's going to follow along, and just like until the weather breaks.
November beans at $13.87. We're up 40½¢ on the week. That puts him into that triple top range. That's in that $14 area. We've heard a couple of times that triple tops are made to be taken out. Do you think that's the case?
Well, I think there's some buy stops up there, and I think the reason being that this forecast remains dry and low demand shows up, they'll give them reason to go on up there and run those stops and possibly push it on up to this 14½ area.
How do you view the bean market?
I view it as a sell eventually, but I want to be respectful if it goes above a weekly close in that 14-15 area. But we did see the August-November spread go back to a carrying charge. I think that's the first lead month, new crop carrying charge we've seen in probably over a year, Todd. So between the demand numbers from USDA and the cut in the exports and the carrying charge coming back in the bean spread, I think you have to start looking at the supply-demand fundamentals as such, that demand is falling faster than supply right now. now, so therefore weather needs to be there on the bean side.
Can you put into perspective what your thoughts were on USDA report day when you saw that ethanol usage was larger than feed and residual usage?
I felt as though the idea from 2-3 years ago that you used to talk to people and ask them the question, is there a new demand plateau? I thought, well, this is the new demand plateau that Todd was always asking about, but I'm skeptical that we can get to those ethanol usage numbers because I don't think the economy is going to allow us to pump that much gas.
Kurt?
Well, the big thing on ethanol and feed usage is you're counting it twice in some areas. We still need clarification on these DDGs because DDGs has saved a lot of these livestock producers here over the last 2 years as far as not having to pay up for corn.
And speaking of the livestock producers, we heard earlier in the week on some of our shows, and maybe you can tell us whether you think this is correct or not, that in the Southwest where they are desperately in need of rainfall, there's expectations that there will be a lot of liquidation of herds there. Will that happen?
Oh, I definitely think so. I think that's happening now. You know, and, you know, it's just going to catapult or, you know, further the price of cattle going into the end of this year and next year.
All right. So I do want to take up the price of cattle because it was kind of a rough week on the livestock side of the marketplace. If you watch those numbers very much, live cattle this week in the August contract at $110.60, they're down $4.05. Feeder cattle were down $7.90 on the week. They settled at $135.70, and the lean hogs at $96.15, they were off just 72.5 cents. But it was kind of ugly once we got to the beef cattle, right?
It was, and it held its 200-day moving average in the August fats, and I think that's a big number to watch next week. I actually think that the fats are going to be a buy pretty soon in terms of the 30- and 45-day cycles. It seems like to me they've taken a good enough hit. Interesting to note, though, on the pork side, record high on the CPI numbers Friday, record high bacon prices of $4.84 a pound, record high. So that's the translation of how do you kill a good grain market rally, livestock liquidation through drought, and also high prices that the consumer is going to have to hit. So short-term bullishness has to be met with some medium-term reality.
Also, too, this last week, too, they a little bit more fine-tuning, over 10 to 11% of our meat's now being exported, so we got to consider the export market as we look down the road. But the deferred cattle contracts are going to find real good support as we move down the road as we look at higher beef prices into 2012.
Well, how much smaller do you think, if at all, the total livestock herd, poultry, pork, dairy, beef cattle, might be in the United States? And is this part of that new balancing act and plateau that we've talked about in the past and you mentioned today?
It is, and I think it goes back to the poultry. Poultry continues to grow against the pork and against the beef, and I think that's a trend that's going to continue because they consume less to get the animal to market, and the diets are moving towards that anyway, Todd. So I do think that you will generally see per capita consumption of beef and pork continue to erode over the long term at the expense of poultry.
Per capita consumption on red meat, beef particularly, has gone down about 5 pounds. And what's picked up the slack, though, is that export market as we start to produce for other countries.
Yeah, so it starts to get kind of interesting because when you look at the ethanol numbers, the ethanol industry came out and said, oh, wait a second, we're more efficient than what the USDA said, so their numbers aren't correct, that we're producing more gallons of ethanol per bushel. In the same process, when we look at the livestock sector, poultry is far more efficient. What is it? I think 0.8 pounds of corn in and 1 pound out, or I'm sorry, 1 pound in and 0.8 pounds of meat out. I can't remember whether that's correct, but it's pretty close, I believe. So it's all about those ratios, isn't it?
Well, and the fact that we're looking at in this next couple of weeks, we're going to have a big influx of beef into the market because we had a lot of feeders hit the market here at the beginning of the year. They're going to come out. But after that, our placement of feeders have been down. So that's why we're bullish cattle going into next year. The hot weather isn't bullish for cattle because actually as it gets hotter, you get less people cooking out. But the hot weather is going to affect the hogs as far as production and dressed weight goes. So, you know, it could be bullish for hogs here, but I think cattle is bearish for the next couple of weeks, and then we're still thinking it could go a lot higher.
I had some clients call in this week and say, why is it that you're so negative the medium term? Put that together with what's going on in the corn and bean market. And I think it goes back to the Chinese pork prices, Todd. They jumped inflation prices. Overall inflation jumped so much because of the Chinese pork prices. And that's what stimulated the Chinese to slow their economy down through higher interest rates and higher lending rates. So these things are all working together with one another to slow that wheel down and not let us produce as much.
Wheat futures this week settled like this. The September contract at a high of 7.21, a low at $6.15 and a quarter. The September, a settlement price at $6.94 and three quarters, up 43 and a half. July wheat at $7.84 and a quarter for next year, up 27 cents. Go back to the feed wheat issue that you were talking about earlier.
Well, when the July was such a strong contract, we didn't have the spread on our side. The basis was on our side, but the spread was not. The cash market was wanting either corn or feed wheat. And what we're hearing now in the global market is the feed wheat's about run its course as far as available supplies to compete with corn. So as we get into fall, that becomes less of a competitor.
Less of a competitor, so that should buoy the corn market?
Wheat should not be a competitor as much to corn.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is the July 15th edition. When we come back, we'll talk with Greg Wagner. He's at GWX in Chicago, Illinois.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The first half of this week was a little warm and sticky, not unusual for July. Oppressive heat and humidity on Monday was relieved somewhat by scattered thunderstorms on Tuesday. Those occurred ahead of a weak cold front that brought even more relief on Wednesday and Thursday. Northeast winds ushered in much cooler and less humid air, keeping max temperatures near to slightly below normal for those 2 days. Even so, temperatures this week averaged 3 to 5 degrees above normal. The relief was brief, however, as temperatures began to climb late in the week. The heaviest rain this week fell across southern Illinois, where thunderstorms continued to erupt through Tuesday. More than 2.5 inches of rain fell in Carbondale for the 24 hours ending Wednesday morning, and amounts near an inch were common in southern Illinois. A half inch of rain fell in east central and parts of northern Illinois during the week, where it was much needed. That may be the last significant rain we see for a few days. An upper level ridge of high pressure will park over the central United States next week, and that scenario usually means a period of hot, humid weather. Temperatures will be in the 90s and dew points well into the 70s for at least the first half of next week. There is some possibility for relief by next weekend as a cold front presses south toward Illinois and sets off showers and thunderstorms. But in general, it looks like the dog days of summer are here for a while. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the July 15 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois. Greg Wagner of GWX Ag Consultants in Chicago is on the phone line. For about 2 decades, he's worked exclusively with grain and livestock producers as well as end users in developing market and risk management strategies. Before I bring Greg into the conversation, one quick correction. I think I told you 1 pound in, 0.8 pounds of meat out for poultry. I didn't think that was correct. Google tells me, and you can correct it yourself later if you want, but I think this is right. 2 pounds of corn in, 1 pound of meat out for poultry. I think the number I gave you actually was for catfish, but it's been a long time since I've done those feed conversion ratios. So on the phone line with us is Greg Wagner. Greg, thanks so much for joining us from Chicago. Tell me how you've read this marketplace and whether you've been able to be consistent in where you think it's going.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Todd, and as well as welcome the panelists. It's a pleasure to be joining you this afternoon. You know, that report, two things. Number one, the grain stocks report and acreage report was essentially horse feathers. And there was a knee-jerk response. Obviously, the markets recovered ostensibly by weather, but there's also fundamentals here at play other than weather pushing the market higher, and that's demand. One thing I would say is that corn has proven historically, I'm talking about corn, the most inelastic demand market ever. In other words, prices have to go so high to ration demand. I question again whether or not demand has been rationed. Obviously, from the low after that June 30th report, we have new crop East corn from high to low, up $1.10. It was $5.75 to $6.85. So, and in the soybean market, Friday's settlement, today's settlement, is actually 10 cents off the high settlement for the contract. So, you know, at 13.87, our highest close was 3.97. We're 10 cents away from that.
Greg, with the you know, with the weather, with especially with the weather during pollination here, what's your projection for a high price in this corn, and how much do you think we can lose, or is it all at a farce here?
Well, you know, without question, it's going to be weather related. Typically, you have a high place somewhere in the June 20th, July 4th time frame. Obviously, that isn't going to occur this year. I tend to think that corn could take out contract highs just across the board here. That includes as well as December 12th, 2012 contract. You know, what this reminds me of, and what I think this is, if we were to look historically at an analog year, I would peg 1995. Now, remember, 1994, we had our first 10 billion bushel corn crop. We had record yields, 138.6 bushels an acre. In 1995, we got hit late with heat. USDA pegged corn yields in their May report at 125.6 bushels an acre. That dropped 113.5 bushels an acre by the final. It dropped 12% or 12.1 bushels an acre, down 9.6%. If we were to set up this heat ridge and it were to stay in place and we were to transpose or make a trajectory of a similar situation that might occur this year, our current yield with USDA at 158.7 would drop 15 bushels an acre. It would give us 143 bushels an acre. And we have shallow-rooted crops out east. You have silking way behind average. So I think yield is being damaged right now. And I am not so much looking to the August 11 report, despite the fact that, you know, you're going to get USDA does, they don't publish it, but they do a population count, near counts and whatnot, and they mechanically dry down some ears, but there's not that many ears that are going to be available to dry down, and they don't, as a matter of protocol, really mechanically dry down ears for August. So, obviously, August 11th, and we're in mid-July, we're a ways away from that report, so the focus will be continue on weather.
Well, Greg, what's your best recommendation as a producer at this stage of the game then?
Well, you should be able to start feeding a bull market. There's no question that you have to be able to, a successful marketer must market into a market that's going up. The worst thing you could do is try picking tops. So if you're behind in your marketing, take advantage of this rally and start giving the market some feeding that bull, so to speak. You also, on the other side, should have the opportunity to buy some reasonably cheap money out of the money calls, which usually aren't expensive, and they have serial call options now, and an explosion in volatility would provide you more bang for your buck than, let's say, buying something that's right in the money.
Greg, how much do the outside markets and the debt and the Europe and the China and the U.S. and all that stuff, how does that factor into what we've been talking about here?
I think it's certainly relevant. There's no question about it. You'd have to be living in a cave or just be in denial to say it's not having an impact. On the positive side, you're going to see more demand from China. There's no question about that. In a very, very big picture, I'm talking longer term, we're going to have to make adjustments as the demographics change in China and also the population ages. That China has incredible challenges ahead of it. Be that as it may, the European debt crisis is real. However, my observation, based on the brinkmanship that is going on between the two parties on raising the debt ceiling, it'll be settled. And I don't think that is going to be impacted. You know, will have an impact on our market. Ben Bernanke, the Fed chairman, has sent out mixed signals as to whether or not we're going to get more stimulus or less stimulus. You know, he said essentially almost contradictory statements this week, the Fed minutes versus what Bernanke had to say. What I would watch out for, what I think is supportive ultimately, will still be the dollar, you know, and supportive from the standpoint if the European Union does not come apart by the seams and Germany acquiesces and steps up to the plate, you could find the dollar moving lower, and I just think that's positive for agriculture, grain markets.
And one final question, and we're just about out of time. You said you'd be a seller in the marketplace on the way up. To what percentage, and I know you're not thinking this right but at this point, but to what percentage would you sell a normal crop yield?
That would depend upon where you're at now with your marketing.
Right. So I want to know what your total percentage, though. So would you be 30% sold now or 40% sold?
Oh, well, you would have to be close to, if you're not 60% sold, get 60% sold. And then, you know, get some puts underneath just in case the floor bottoms up. You know, if we talk in the future, I think my suspicions are is we're going to be in for fasten your seatbelts. We're going to be in for quite a ride here coming into end of July, early August.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Thank you.
Greg Wagner is with GWX Ag Consultants. Time for a final word from our analyst in studio, Mike Georgie of Allendale.
Which is true. We're going to have a volatile market, and don't sit on your hands and expect this thing to keep going up. You better make some sales and put some protection on.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Mike, my tomatoes aren't ready. I think I better go get that bacon before it goes higher.
And Mike Zuzaloff, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Let's watch the two extremes and do something about it. Micro fundamentals continue to get better. Macro continue to get it worse. Let's try and put something together so we aren't caught between the two.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find not only Commodity Week, but our daily programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report. Have a safe week. Make sure there's plenty of water for the animals and stay inside.